Oh, that's not right. Okay, we have, let me see if I have the right file here. I do have the right file. I was going to start out with a disclosure statement, and I do have disclosures. Some of them are less serious than others, but I do some work for Amgen and Allergen in terms of pregnancy exposure outcomes and so on, which is not directly relevant to this, but I felt I should disclose it. But the most important thing is that I really do break for bluegrass, and in birth defects and developmental epidemiology field, people know about the amniotic band syndrome, and we do have an amniotic band. And we showed up last year at a conference, and you never know when they're going to show up. You know, if you guys have a conference where I can get some people who want to make some music together, you just never know. Somebody's shaking his head. Maybe we have another musician. Good. Okay. So what I wanted to do, one of my other disclaimers is, you know, I do not do a lot of work in this field. You know, I am a perinatal and pediatric epidemiologist, and I look at some of the big picture issues in terms of child health and special needs and so on. So my insights are kind of coming at this topic from an outside perspective. So some of them are going to make sense, and others are going to probably, you know, possibly, you know, be out in left field. We'll see. But one of the things I wanted to point out, it seems to me from the research that I've seen in this session and the one yesterday, that we're really falling into what Dr. Brian McCarthy talked about in terms of maternal and child health. You know, we count what we can count, we measure what we can measure, and are we really counting what should be counting and measuring what should be measuring? And obviously you can't get to the point where you can count what you want to count until you prove that what you're currently counting isn't what you should. So it's an excellent thing that we're mining the data that we currently have available. But as we do that, we need to kind of inventory and identify what are some of the bigger picture issues that we'd really like to have data about, because, you know, we're spending, what is it, $4 billion a year on developing new health information systems, or I think that's just what the federal government's spending, but the healthcare sector is spending probably 10 times that much. And if we could get our act together and figure out exactly what we need, we might be able to get it integrated into some of these routine data collection systems so that we could have, you know, better data that would allow us to answer some of our questions. Another thing I want to point out, and I am very much a population health person, and it's probably true that the vast majority of foster care recipients get their health insurance through Medicaid. It is definitely not true that all of the children who are using psychotropic medications are on Medicaid. And even if we think about the public insurance sector, Medicaid is not the only way that people get public insurance either. And so we have, not in every state does the child health insurance program integrate with Medicaid. There are some others. And so we're not necessarily capturing the whole picture of this population. We're capturing one that's defined really based on you know, who we're actually seeing. It's again that we count what we can count. Also, we have a major emphasis on treatment and particular prescriptions, and linking that up with diagnosis, and also linking that up with other treatments that might be available or appropriate for children with these conditions would be useful as well. And then, of course, we have Eve is explaining to Adam that he should try one before comparing them to oranges. But there are definitely comparison issues that we have there. And you know, one Medicaid program does not equal another Medicaid program, does not equal another Medicaid program. When we put all this data together into one big data set, we have to remember that. And, you know, as an epidemiologist, you know, one of the things that we do is when we know that there's a factor, we don't really have ways to sort it out, but at least we could, you know, use generalized estimating equations and use state as a cluster variable, you know, so that we can, it doesn't account for everything, but at least it's a start. And then, of course, you know, this whole business with electronic health records and big data. And, you know, I've been interested in pharmacy records for a long time, you know, and also lab records, because these are pretty much standardized all across the country. You know, if a state wanted to have a prescription registry, it would be a very simple thing for, you know, the state of, well, I don't know if they'd do it in Florida, but a more progressive state like the state of Massachusetts, for example, they could just pass a law that says any time a prescription is filled, it has to be reported to a state database. It's all HL7, all of them are standardized completely, and in the same way that many states now have statewide databases for lab results. You know, in the state of New York, you have to be the right person to have the right kind of permissions, but it's possible to get a data set of all genetic tests that were done on people who are residents of the state of New York. You know, obviously that's not something that you or I are going to get our hands on, but if we were working with the right kind of a problem. And so I think, you know, as the field of pharmacoepidemiology evolves, you know, we need to be thinking about how we can take better advantage of what's going on with the HR and with big data, because there's going to be some opportunities coming down the pike that can completely transform the way that we think about things, but we don't want to be still standing at the station when the train leaves. So we need to be thinking about that. And then some other things, you know, when we're working with these claims data especially, and we've already talked about in the discussion, you know, which came first, the treatment or the diagnosis, you know, and in some cases the diagnosis is there primarily so that the treatment can be given, and sometimes it's the other way around. And so being able to parse out if it's possible to map out, you know, the history. I actually call it the diagnostic odyssey, because so many of these children really go through a journey of epic proportions, you know, to get to where they actually get a diagnosis that really fits what they have. And along the way, they are on a whole variety of different treatments that sometimes don't work very well, and sometimes might. When we think about children with special health care needs, you know, they frequently do have co-occurring conditions, and you know, the comorbid experience that they have, you know, to some extent is going to influence what kind of treatments they're on, what kind of drugs and so on. Another thing I wanted to point out, which, and this is probably not particularly practical, but education, you know, we probably spend even more money on education than we do on developing new health information systems in this country. And the children we're talking about end up in a variety of different programs. You know, they end up in birth to three programs when they're younger. They end up in special education. Maybe they don't. Maybe they're mainstreamed. But there still are processes for capturing educational outcomes. And those things, you know, could be very important. As an epidemiologist, we like to translate everything into black and white. You know, you're dead or you're not dead. You know, you have a disease or you don't. You're on a drug or you're not, and so on. But most of these kids, you know, it's a little bit more subtle than that. You know, are they kept back a grade in school? Are they performing well on standardized tests? You know, things like that. And there's a lot of data that are collected through the education system that potentially could be brought to bear, you know, that might give us a richer set of outcomes. But the next line is the problem. And so, I don't know how many of you have ever worked with or tried to work with education data, but there's this thing called FERPA, which is about educational rights and privacy. And it actually is considerably more draconian as a barrier to access to data than HIPAA is in many different ways. But we need to figure out as a country how to make it possible for education data to be used in research, because, you know, the whole argument typically is, well, if the research is something that could benefit the children's education, then it could be possible if it can benefit the school district in terms of improving planning and so on. And that gets translated in a lot of states and a lot of school districts into, you know, a very wary approach to enabling these data to be used for research. But it's something that in the long run you know, when you're dealing with children with ADHD, for example, and looking at different kinds of treatments, well, what kind of outcomes are you really looking at? You know, it's, you know, clearly in terms of child growth and development and so on, education is important. And just another disclaimer, I do have grandchildren. That's my older grandchild, and then coming up later, you'll get to see my newer grandchild. Anyway, so spatial perspectives. As I was listening to the presentations, I was struck that there's probably a lot more that we can actually do in terms of looking at spatial aspects of this. And what I was hearing in the discussion is that, you know, you guys have actually done more of that than what was presented. So I was glad to see that. But, you know, when you think about states, and my comment about multi-level modeling is kind of along this way, that when you just look at things in an ecological context, you might not be able to really parse out, you know, factors that are there. Also, it would astonish me if there isn't rural-urban variation within states in terms of what's going on, because, you know, the distribution of providers, you know, behavioral medicine clinics, for example, or developmental pediatric clinics. You know, in Florida, we don't have very many, you know, comprehensive developmental pediatric centers. And they tend to be in just a few of our urban areas, and people who live in rural areas or in a community that doesn't have one have major lack of access. There's also, you know, the distribution by provider type, and that's actually something that could be looked at even without looking at spatial factors, you know, in terms of who are the people who are making these prescription decisions. And for that matter, for a child who has multiple prescriptions, you know, is there some kind of variation in terms of who's writing the prescriptions? We talked about role of state level policies, and then, you know, the possibility again of being able to look in finer detail at some of the patterns. And then I wanted to say a few things about a comment that was made yesterday about, you know, is it time for a Framingham? Because that's a really interesting idea. You know, for those of you who aren't familiar with Framingham, in the late 1940s, they created a cohort of middle-aged adults to collect data on basically on chronic disease risk factors. And at the time, they just collected a lot of data. They brought the people back for two-year follow-up visits. And I think there's still a handful, maybe a very small number of people from the cohort who are still alive. They're probably in their hundreds right now because, you know, it's been 65. But that's the thing. The cohort's still continuing, and they are following the children of the members of the cohort. They are now following the grandchildren of the members of the cohort. And it enables, as we've learned more about things that we should be studying, it enables us to go back and get at some other issues. But thinking about how you would frame a pediatric Framingham so that it would really target the group that you're interested in would take some thinking. Because you want to do it in a way that's really going to be efficient. You know, we already tried this thing, we called it the National Children's Study, and just didn't work out all that well. But maybe if we could, you know, create a cohort of a few thousand where all of the children who entered the cohort were, you know, our target group, that might be something that would be more efficient. I think that's definitely an interesting idea, and it takes a lot of time to take an idea like that and translate it into a fundable project, but it could be the kind of thing that one of the major foundations would also have an interest. So there's the other grandson. He's a cute guy. He's just now starting to crawl around. I get to see him next week. And then, of course, we have the witches, a la Macbeth, and one saying to the other, what I really hate is knowing that I'm doing this exactly the way my mother did it. We always have to be cognizant that, you know, there, as we have opportunities, they can also allow us to use new methods and new ways of thinking that potentially can help us to answer questions more effectively. So let's see, I think I have contact information there too. But I thought it's a very interesting group of presentations we had, and I think it's a field that it has the potential to really open things up in the next few years. Okay. So now we have a general discussion, right? Yeah.
We have a fair amount of time to open the floor for discussion, which we really kind of wanted that opportunity to think about what should be the agenda kind of moving forward. I appreciate Russ's comments bringing up the education outcomes. I think one of the things that we talked about yesterday, and I'd like to kind of see if people wanted to further discuss, is what type of outcomes should we be monitoring over time. The other thing, you brought up the pediatric Framingham and thinking about the study designs and cohorts that we should be thinking about, integrating the Medicaid data with the electronic medical records or electronic health records. One of the things that's always been lacking in our data sets from the claims data is any kind of clinical basis in terms of clinical parameters that could have a better indication of some of the severity of the condition as well as any progress throughout treatment. And then, thinking about these very young children, and one of the things, even though you had a very small number of kids on Polypharm, I was glad, but, I think that it starts a trend where what happens when they're 5, 6, and so are they the ones that we're now looking at in very complex meds that are hard to take those children off these meds. So I want to thank all the presenters today for coming and sharing their data, and I think the studies were really insightful. And really contribute to a nice session. So with that, I'd like to open the floor for any comments or thoughts from the group and thinking about this issue and what to do next. The treatment sequencing and trying to tracking prescription refills over time is always pretty complicated because nothing ever works on a monthly time frame. It's always within. And so trying to figure out how these regimens are changing, and I think your comment about having kind of raise a child and they go through these various iterations of different therapies and things get changed all the time because nothing really seems to be working quite right. So it is looking at how the combinations are being used over time, as well as the switching of combinations over time. So there's, it's not just going from single to polypharmacy, but one polypharmacy to another polypharmacy and back. And that can happen a lot, over a 12-month period. So when we think about just basic pharmacology and how long some of these medications at least take to even have some type of, level that we would say, okay, now we expect to see an effect. Sometimes these switches happen even before that. So trying to kind of get a picture of that and just knowing from some of the work with families that I've been doing, that it's very much that these things evolve. You don't just get a diagnosis, but you get the diagnosis that we think it is today, and then a treatment that follows, and then things emerge, and that didn't. There's still some symptoms. Well, maybe we were not correct in that diagnosis, and then kind of move on. So, it's a very hard thing to do, and to the extent that we can use some of these patterns to understand the underlying instability of the condition of whatever that cluster of morbidity that the child has. So, I don't think we really have a good name for these things.
PTA data that we have was a very select volunteer population, undoubtedly many more upper middle class kids with families with capability of following protocols. So I think we have to be really, really pragmatic about understanding the possibilities that, you know, severe aggression could be actually behavioral toxicity. This kid is on a very high dose of amphetamine salts, which have not been around that long, okay, for us to really, and is could be already in a, so either you've got a high dose problem, or, and so the problem for the parent, for the doctor, is to recognize that this new behavior, you have to rule out that it's existing meds. If you're not ruling out it's the existing meds, because you don't think that way too often, then the probability is that you're adding in that atypical antipsychotic because the first, the stimulant isn't working. So we're kind of in a conundrum, I think, and particularly focusing on the poor. Because I think their vulnerability is here, and the foster care worst of all, right? Because of all the placement issues, all the other things that we have, doctor has very little control over. So I'm just trying to figure out how doing the retrospective work that we're doing, which is all lovely and wonderful, but I don't find where the advocacy agenda is going to come from that's going to change things, because the clinical practice guidelines for either pediatrics or child psych really don't say don't do very often, right, except for the two antipsychotic combos. So I'm throwing that out about thinking about, because we are in a public health forum here, which is different from being in a medical practice forum, and thinking about what could make a difference.
I mean, I think you're right, because I think that to move forward, to best understand this, we can't just rely on administrative data. I think there has to be either a prospective study to collect the kind of outcomes that are most important to this, the educational outcomes, the social outcomes, the family outcomes, so we either have to pair the administrative data and Medicaid outcomes with some, you know, simultaneous prospective outcome that actually captures these outcomes that are more important to understand. Are the kids, are they doing better in school? Are they functioning better in their family? Are they having appropriate social emotional development? In addition to, are they developing metabolic disease? Do they have diabetes? Do they have, you know, normal brain development? Because how kids function in the world is really what they're coming to their psychiatrist to improve how they function socially and emotionally in the world, not for other reasons. So I think you're right, we need to do more, but, you know, with the data that you have, we don't have the ability to look at that right now.
I think teasing apart some of what you were talking about with the behavioral toxicity for this population is challenging, only because, and the reason I raised the question about the psychosis, and I totally get it. I mean, we're reliant on what's there, and then you kind of scratch your head and say, how can they have possibly made a diagnosis of psychosis, but this is what is there, and so that's why I kind of go back to some of the trauma, you know, and some of those kind of early, you know, exposures that these kids have, and that we have these symptoms that emerge early, and there is no label for it. So I think these may not be all of them, but I think these aggressive behaviors are emerging that, you know, that are not the behavioral toxicity that lands the children on an antipsychotic. That these behaviors are seen really, really early, and how they're being managed. Like maybe the ADHD is the first step, and then when that step doesn't work, they add on the antipsychotic. I'm not sure that it would, you know, be the behavioral toxicity of the stimulant, and that's certainly something to look at. And I mean, you can't get at the side effect, but you can look at the dosing and where the dosing kind of falls with respect to what would be a reasonable dose for these kids. But I think that's one of the things of what kind of data could we pull together to get at some of that? And I know, you know, Ramesh, you've been doing some data integration with survey data, panel survey data with Medicaid data is one option. So creating these data linkages would be a place for kind of advocacy, because you can continue to do the Medicaid database analyses, but you're always going to be, like, you know, a few years behind. You know, I think even with your data update, you're up to 2008 or 9. Right, in like 2009, we're almost here, into 2015. And given all of the changes that are coming from the feds with regard to states working together, I think understanding how those states are pulling together their data systems and not being afraid to do that. And I think in St. Louis or in Missouri, you all have an integrated system that works. And maybe you can talk a little bit about that. Because I think that kind of mandate, you know, that's the kind of advocacy, because then you can start to do the longitudinal, you can link it to some of these outcomes, and to get the educational data would be great, because are we doing good by these children in early initiation of treatment, and are they progressing through school? So I can't imagine a child on four different medications by the first grade is really, you know, comprehending what they should be comprehending in school. But maybe you can talk a little bit about your integrated systems, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure.
Very exciting, you know, possibility to help us understand.
that was going to be my next segment, was
getting
through legal if God...
I was interested in your question with the possibility of saving money,
right.
Okay, but saving lives or whatever, other public health aspects of these questions are very important.
It's coming up to 2 o'clock, which is the end of the session. I think we've had a lot of good discussion around some directions and kind of going further, and there is the work group set up. Listen, it would be nice to continue this and think about whether we could pull together a policy paper for APHA around these issues and really be integrated across the sections just to endorse and support. Is there a resolution or something that we can kind of put forth some of them kind of maybe more immediate actions and you know some of the issues around kind of in Missouri and the integrated system, who has access to this information, and when we have part of our health information exchange the capability to link across different healthcare systems, but as a researcher there's limited access to who can kind of go in. So I think that there are ways in which we could probably put forth some, things that we would want to advocate for in order to really be able to come full circle and do a really nice job of looking at some of the health risks, particularly around these kids with special health care needs. And I would add, I agree with the fetal alcohol syndrome and things like that, and also children that have chromosomal deficiencies that then lead to a lot of complications and a lot of these behaviors that families have. And functions of a huge problem dealing with and end up using a lot of these treatments. So I do want to, again, thank our presenters and thank all of you for the discussion today and those of you that came to both sessions. I appreciate the support at both sessions, and hopefully next year we can take this the next step further. So thank you again.